Welcome back to K-Scope, the post-progressive podcast. Billy Reeves here, pleasure to have your company as ever. Now, early pioneers of Norwegian black metal, Ulva, have continually evolved throughout their career. Living legends of the dark music industry, they've blended rock, electronica, symphonic and chamber traditions and have always done exactly whatever they've wanted. Last year, K-Scope released the beautiful Wars of the Roses album, and now Childhood's End, a collection of classic psychedelic and garage rock numbers, unique versions of tunes by the likes of the 13th Floor Elevators, a Jefferson Airplane, The Pretty Things, and some obscure ones too. We'll hear from Chris from Ulva after this, originally recorded by the Beau Brummels, available as a free download, kscopemusic.com/Ulva. This is called Magic Hollow.
If you would go to Magic Hollow, yes, come with me, come up with me to Magic Hollow. Touch the stars as in a dream. Must make the time, make it one time to what you are missing. A magic delight be on your sight, fantastic prism. Lights and colors lingering, spin them, touch. There's splintering magic. Ooh, it's magic. Is blessed, you have not guessed, so won't you follow? Follow through the dark, I hear the lark of Magic Hollow. Calling out a melody, veiled within magic. Hey, yeah, magic.
Ulva, from the K-Scope album Childhood's End. The album's out now. That's their take on Magic Hollow. We sent Scott from the K-Scope office to Ulva's studio in Oslo, and he started by asking Chris, why record a bunch of wild psych covers?
Just kind of, to me, it's somehow the birth of rock music as we relate to rock music in a way, coming from a sort of heavy metal background. It's interesting to delve into where it all started to happen for the first time, you know, turning guitars around, reversing them, and, you know, all those things that happened at the time. And of course, it was a, generally speaking, a very exciting time, I would imagine.
Yeah.
To be young in and kind of, you know, LSD was legal and people were really opening up to many, many things. And I think a lot of magic was born in that era, really. So it's a sort of exposure to things that I know a lot of people who probably listen to us are unfamiliar with. So there's a kind of desire to be ambassadors in this as well for a lot of things that we love, you know, and sort of hope that we can open some gates. This is actually the stuff that we sit at home and listen to and get really stoked about, you know. So so it's quite simple. It's not really, it's not, I tend to read that that people aren't really surprised by our you know, left turns anymore. So people, but you know, I hope they'll like it in a way that with music, apart from kind of enhancing already existing formulas and ways to do things in terms of production or those kind of matters, that nothing really new happened since the 90s. Because now, except from this kind of hybrid culture that seems to be going on a lot, and you know, there's been a lot of talk about the loudness wars and all this, and so we're definitely a bit more conservative in that respect. Not that I don't look forward, but or at the current, but I do have a tendency to go back and look for gems.
You've been doing more touring and playing the game, as you called it in the last podcast interview that we had. What's been the best and worst things about coming out to play?
The worst is definitely the fact that it takes so much time and effort to actually be like a touring band, if you will, that you lose focus. And cause we're the type of band that we really need, if we want to do something properly, we would ideally need to be in the studio and have that like as our everyday gig. So in that sense, being around and playing a lot is a distraction, a much needed distraction. On the other hand, I think because things were stagnating a bit when we decided to play live, that was possibly also one of the arguments for playing live, that it's about time to take that challenge and just try and do it to the best of our abilities. It has overall been good to and reassuring for us, the whole live aspect of this band. Sometimes the gigs we've had in where the kind of preconditions have been pretty bad turn out to be good gigs, you know, in spite of that. So it's difficult to say. Other times you're playing in a venue where everything is kind of technically top notch and everything is up to par with requirements.
Scratch, yeah.
And the gig hasn't been that good for some reason. So live is very volatile that way. You never know. There are a few I remember. We played a very small place up in Switzerland where we were a bit surprised when we came in, like we're playing here, we could barely fit on stage, you know, quite a few people and with the screen behind us and everything. But you know, just the vibe of the place, the people who worked there, you know, everything just made it into a really magical gig, you know?
Yeah.
And so that has something to do with it as well. You know, you can step into a opera type environment and just be met with nonchalance from the people who work there. And London has been good for the most part. I think both Scala, Coco, and Queen Elizabeth Hall as well. Berlin was spectacular, I think. The opera in Oslo was great. It wasn't our best gig, actually, but it was a bit like stiff, probably because my parents were in the audience, but definitely the biggest production we've had. So, yeah. It's hard to say, but we've been lucky to have pulled off quite a few good concerts, I would say,
yeah,
the last 2 years. Yeah. It always feels better when you come to a place you know you have an existing fan base, and And so we've always had that kind of fundamental philosophy that, you know, in most contexts, less is more. It's better to do two sort of bigger things than do eight smaller club gigs.
Yeah.
And it's different because it's, you know, you're surrounded by people who have talents in different areas, you know. So it's very easy to approach a recording session, you know, using all these people. So yeah. So both this album that we're making now and also the last one, Wars of the Roses, has been much more of a collaborative sort of effort than things used to be. I kind of feel that there might come a reaction to that where we're going to need to go back to a sort of more two or three people defining things from the get-go and then probably not involving too many people in the process, too early at least.